ABC Radio Australia.
Over the past few days, Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong has been on a three-nation Pacific tour, visiting Fiji, Tonga and Vanuatu. Her trip comes just 2 weeks after the Australian federal election, which saw Labor sweeping back into power for a second back-to-back term. As part of her visit, she has re-emphasized Australia's commitment to climate action in Fiji. She's helped wipe out Tonga's budget deficits and has continued talks for a bilateral partnership with Vanuatu. Joining me now to discuss what these commitments mean for the region is Dr. Tess Newton-Cain, an associate with the Development Policy Center and adjunct associate professor at the Griffith Asia Institute. Good morning, Tess.
Good morning, Evan.
Now, Tess, the trip marks 2 times in a row that Penny Wong has made the Pacific a priority visit after elections. How should Pacific countries be reading this latest trip?
Well, I think, as you say, it's something of a mirror of what we saw after the previous election in 2022, when Senator Wong was in the region very, very soon afterwards. So I think that's a good sign. I think, you know, as we know in the Pacific, it's all about relationships. I think it demonstrates a strong sense of continuity in terms of where the Pacific sits in the, you know, in the arena when it comes to Australian foreign policy thinking. I think it's interesting that she took Matt Thistlethwaite with her. I think that was to kind of introduce him to some of the key players. He's new to the foreign policy team in the Labor government. And my expectation is that given everything else that's going on in the world, we may not see Senator Wong in the region very often. She may have other priorities, but my expectation is that Matt Thistlethwaite will be spending quite a lot of time in the region as the assistant foreign minister. So it's good for him to get a chance to get his feet on the ground and meet some of the people that he's going to be dealing with.
Mm. Now, Tess, one of the things that Penny Wong emphasized when she was in Fiji was that she said that Australia had been listening to the Pacific over the past term. What's your thoughts on this? Has Australia been listening to what Pacific leaders and Pacific countries have been saying over the past 3 years or so?
I think there's no denying that there's been a huge amount of effort put into Pacific relationships during that first term. And obviously, one of the things that we will be looking for is the extent to which that can and will be maintained during this second term. We've seen Australian ministers in the region a lot at various regional meetings, ministerial meetings. They've had bilateral meetings. We've seen Pacific leaders and officials in Australia a lot meeting with their counterparts. So there's definitely, in terms of the quantity of engagement, then there's definitely been plenty of that. And each of those opportunities is an opportunity to listen. I think, you know, I tweeted or blue skied recently that what comes after listening is more listening, is we need to see there needs to be more listening, there needs to be better listening, deeper listening. And I think also there needs to be a commitment to listening to things that maybe are uncomfortable to hear. I think it's a process, not a product. You can't kind of tick the box and say, okay, we've done the listening now. It needs to be an ongoing process.
And look, one of the things Penny Wong, the foreign minister, has been talking about to Pacific leaders is co-hosting next year's COP31 climate summit. How successful do you think this trip has been in moving towards getting the Pacific on board and in full support?
Look, I think it's generally the case that there is full support at the leadership, the political leadership level. I think there is still some concern and possibly some reluctance when it comes to civil society and climate activists who are maybe more concerned about, you know, is this some kind of climate washing or greenwashing exercise? But I think when it comes to the Pacific leadership level, we know that commitment to co-host is already there. Interesting, Surungal Whips of wrote yesterday in The Guardian and made a couple of points about what his expectation is that would look like. And he talked about the importance of Pacific voices and Pacific thinking being very much at the forefront of how this COP is is put together as an offering, assuming that it is awarded, and we don't know when that will be, that decision will be made. But, you know, he talks about wanting to see Pacific people, Pacific climate specialists in co-hosting positions, in leading the design of the COP. And he also made reference to it being hosted on Australia's eastern seaboard, on Australia's Pacific coast, which is an interesting comment from him, given that most recently it was suggested that if it were to be awarded, it would go to Adelaide, which is not on Australia's Pacific coast.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting to see how that pans out with COP31. Look, the other expectation from Pacific countries, which Surangul Whips had mentioned before, and Vanuatu's foreign minister, not foreign minister, but environment minister, Ralph Riggenvanu, has mentioned recently, is about the expectation that Australia wouldn't be opening any new coal mines or any new gas projects. Do you think that's something that would eventually Australia would come around to? Is that just too big of a moonshot?
Look, well, certainly I think, you know, I think sort of alongside that, what we are expecting, or what the Pacific is expecting and hoping for, is that when Australia's new climate ambition or climate emissions targets are announced, that they will be considerably more ambitious than they already are. I think, you know, Penny Wong did make reference in speaking that Australia was a small emitter, and certainly, you know, we know that in the energy mix, renewables are now very high, but that doesn't get away from the fact that they are opening new projects and they are exporting fossil fuels, and it's a key part of the Australian economy, as we know. In some parts of Australia, it's particularly significant. So in Queensland, where I am, and also in Western Australia, it's a very hard domestic policy issue for Labor to turn the economy around from being fossil fuel dependent. Now, Labor is now looking at being in government for a sustained term. Certainly, you know, they've got 3 years now, and, you know, the political pundits are telling us that they'll have another 3 years after that, almost certainly. So that does give them a window to make that, to try and make that change, if it's something that there's political will for. But I think that it's going to continue to be a tension point for this government, for the Albanese government, to, you know, keep those conversations going with the Pacific, to maintain credibility with Pacific partners, with the Pacific family, as Australia likes to call it, and deal with the domestic implications of what changing the economy in quite a fundamental way would look like.
Now, Tess, looping back to Penny Wong's trip, she was in Tonga, where she announced that commitment of $50 million for Tonga's budget. How significant is this for Tonga?
Well, we'll see very soon, Evan, because the budget in Tonga is about to be announced. So I did hear your colleague Marion talking yesterday, saying that it may be that people are working through the night to rewrite the budget based on that announcement, unless they'd had previous information about it. So we'll know more precisely what it means when the budget's handed down in Tonga. But certainly, given what we know about the amount of debt that Tonga has been carrying and the difficulties that servicing that debt was starting to have, those difficulties that were there, and what the expectation was in terms of how Tonga would maintain adequate service delivery, particularly in relation to things like health and education, then, you know, we've every reason to think that this commitment by Australia will make a very significant difference, and will hopefully free up some fiscal space for Tonga to be able to organise things so that they can service the debt as needed, but also still maintain adequate service delivery for the citizens.
And staying in Tonga, Penny Wong also met with Tonga's defence minister. Now, last term we saw that Australia got closer security ties with PNG, Nauru, and there's that arrangement with Tuvalu. Should we be expecting something similar between Australia and Tonga?
I mean, I think it's possible. I think certainly, you know, having now that Australia's had this success, which is no doubt how these things are considered with the countries that you've mentioned, they'll be looking to have other relationships of that sort and be bringing in these agreements. Obviously, Australia and Tonga already have a very close relationship, and their defence forces have a close relationship as well. So there's definitely basis on which to elevate that to some agreement. I think, you know, what's interesting about these bilateral agreements is that in the three cases you've mentioned, we've seen, you know, the Pacific country gets something in return for some kind of security undertaking. So it's, you know, I guess what we'd need to think about is, well, what would Tonga like? What would Tonga want on their side of the ledger? And how able and willing is Australia to provide that?
And on the final country, in Vanuatu, she met with Jotham Napat, and they mentioned the Nakamal partnership. Now, if we go back to 2022, there was a bilateral security agreement, but that hasn't progressed as fast or as expected. How do you see the Nakamal partnership working when the other one previously hasn't come to fruition?
Well, I think you know, Australia has wanted some sort of security agreement with Vanuatu for a very long time. Vanuatu has been very cautious about going down that path. I think that caution will remain, but obviously it's now within a kind of, it's now being channeled, or there's now a roadway, there's a pathway to this. We heard yesterday from Jotham Napat that Prime Minister Albanese is expected to visit Vanuatu in September. And that is when we expect this partnership agreement to be signed. So there's obviously an aspiration for it to come into being. And there's a roadway, there's a timeline that's for people to work on it in terms of, like I say, getting the nuts and bolts into place, what Australia is prepared to put in, what Vanuatu is prepared to sign up to. My sources in Vanuatu tell me that the current government, led by Jotham Napat, is very reluctant and would be, in fact, it was described as a red line in terms of having text in there that would allow Australia to have any say or any kind of implied veto over who else Vanuatu could cooperate with. So I think there's some work to do to get it to where everybody's happy to sign off on it, assuming that all the same players are in place.
Now, Tess, finally, before we move on, what will the Pacific be looking for in terms of Australia now that Penny Wong has done her rounds? What do you think is ahead?
Well, I think you know, the Pacific is looking for, I think interesting, she didn't go to Samoa, but Fiamme yesterday did also make some comments about just how every I think she said every man and his dog is coming. So I think it's a case of how Australia establishes a balance of a consistent and maintained relationship that involves face-to-face meetings, visits and whatever else, without being part of this cacophony that Pacific leaders are dealing with, of people just kind of like turning up every week and wanting events and press events and whatever else. And so I think it's about maintaining that balance between, yes, we are here, we are part of this family, this is our region, this is where we live and this is where we spend our time. And we want to get to know all of you, and we want you to know us. There's definitely needs to be a commitment to that without making it an overload. And I think also what we need to see now that Labour has this second term, now that there has been a lot of groundwork doing maybe more strategic work rather than what we have seen previously, is a lot of kind of knee-jerk reactions to events. We need to think about, well, where is Australia, you know, where is Australia, where does Australia see its lane as, where does the Pacific want Australia's lane to be, and how can they deepen their commitments in those spaces?